all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web, veteransradio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. And finally, PuroClean. PuroClean is the paramedics of property damage. It provides water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, mold removal, biohazard cleanup. It also has a focus on veteran franchisees. You can learn more about them by going to puroclean.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Colonel Stephen P. Perkins, U.S. Army retired. We're going to talk a little bit about his service, but we're also going to talk with him about his intersection with Major General Oliver W. Dillard Senior, who's a pretty impressive figure, I think you'll agree by the time we get done with this. But Colonel, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thanks, Jim. I really appreciate it. It's been a while since I've seen you. I guess we first met back in May of 2023 at the VA clinic dedication, and I was really appreciative of your efforts on that.
Well, Major General Dillard, somebody to talk more about and learn more about. But before we get in there, you've had a long military career and Army civilian career. So that our veteran radio listeners kind of know you're a guy who knows what he's talking about, tell us a little bit about your military and Army civilian career.
Yes, I was commissioned out of Cameron University, which is right there by Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And immediately after coming out of the Guard for almost 2 years as an artillery officer, I became an infantry officer. Did that for about 10 years, including service with the 82nd Airborne Division and the 25th Infantry Division, and then made the transition to military intelligence. I commanded a battalion at Fort Stewart and got a chance to go to Iraq in 2006-2007. But really, the biggest thing for me, in addition to doing a bunch of those things in the Army, was coming out and being a civilian and using those skills that I had acquired over the course of 28 years and going into a civilian service that I didn't know exactly what I was getting into, but it was one of those things of we immediately made the transition from Fort McPherson, Georgia, in the Atlanta area, to Fort Bragg / Fort Liberty here in North Carolina. It was during that time period that I first really discovered General Dillard, even though he was an infantry officer, kind of turned MI officer, and immediately, you know, my ears perked that, hey, this was an opportunity to do something for our first G2 here at FORCECOM. Or Forces Command.
So I'm going to stop you there on a couple of things because we've got listeners who are not as familiar with the lingo. So tell us what you transferred into the Military Intelligence Corps, and I know there would be plenty of people who would make a joke at this point about that being an oxymoron, but tell us what military intelligence is about.
Yeah, pretty much in my case, it was to be a tactical intelligence officer, meaning that I would find out about the enemy, analyze it, and give it to my commander as he made decisions. In my case, I also became a counterintelligence officer. And so it was one of those things of, I won't say we're the James Bonds of the military, but we're people that go out and use information gathered from other sources like about the adversary and bring it back to our commanders. So really, it's just a matter of, in my case, I had a busted knee as an infantry officer, and I said, well, you know, I probably need a couple of skills before I retire. And so I went in and I was intrigued by the intelligence field, and they gave me an opportunity to do that.
Well, I would also point out to our listeners that Colonel Perkins picked up his master's degree in strategic studies from the U.S. Army War College back in 2001. So both experience and educated in this general area. I want to get another thing out of the way here before you go on and tell a story about General Dillard, and that is, you mentioned the term G2. So explain to the listeners what is the G2 designation in the Army.
Yeah, G2s are essentially go back to the Napoleonic era, to where Napoleon had gave numbers to the various skills or offices that he had on his staff. So G1s being personnel, G3s being operations, and G4s being logistics. So G2 is the intel or intelligence and security aspects of a staff. So that person is actually trained. Sometimes it's an inherent thing, which is kind of the way it was for General Dillard in the beginning. So S2s or G2s, depending upon what level of staff. So generals get a G2. The other guys just get S2s. But that was really General Dillard's first exposure to a staff. Was he was the S2 for a battalion in Korea.
Well, let's go back now and transition this to talking about Major General Oliver Dillard, who was born in 1926 in Alabama. But tell us about his education and how he found himself in the military.
Well, he's an interesting character in that he comes from a really poor background, but not one that didn't appreciate education. So he came out of high school, out of high school at about the age of 16, and went to Tuskegee Institute. And so around that same time, the war started, and he was really too young. So he goes to college, and as he starts to turn 18, well, they start looking at him being drafted. And so he puts in a deferment, and they accept it. The next year, however, with 1945, he doesn't think he's past the age of getting into the military and the draft. He doesn't know anything about the draft. And as a young black or African-American student, he's not sure what that whole thing is in the military. But he goes through it, even though he's an RTC at Tuskegee. He goes through the process, and the Army says, no, we want you. And he goes, well, the war's already over in Europe. And they had other things for him to do, like the occupation of Europe after the war. So he gets in there, sneaks in before 1946, which is really essentially when the war ends in Europe, and gets pushed over as an artillery unit in Europe. So during that time period, he gets identified by a white officer and pushed into OCS. So that's really the first time that he gets so he's got 3 years of college. He's in the unit, comes out of OCS, goes through the Korean War, and then gets a chance to finish his degree while he's at Commander General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. And ultimately, his education ends formally when he goes through the National War College in Fort McNair, District of Columbia, and is dual student, if you will, at the George Washington University. And so that's kind of his education background.
And what's really sort of unique and here that people ought to make sure they're catching is he starts out as an enlisted guy.
He does.
His skill set is recognized. He's encouraged, or I think you said pushed, into going to officer candidate school so that he can move from enlisted to an officer, which normally would have required that degree. They get him through OCS. They get him through making sure he picks up his degree. And now he's on a whole different path, isn't he?
He is. And he's only one of the three black students in the Command General Staff College. Immediately following that, he goes to the University of Omaha, now Nebraska, Omaha, in like a special program for people like him. Nowadays, we actually don't let them go that deep. They have to basically get it before their degree before they are captains. And so he's already a major at that time, but he's being recognized as being a fast mover, if you will, at the time. And this is really, when he went to Korea back in 50-51, he was in a segregated unit. So now we fast forward to basically the CGSC class of 58. And he's now one of only three students in that whole class that are, lack of a better term today, a person of color that are making it through that course. So the Army is definitely starting to identify him. And he's a person at that point with a Silver Star and a CIB, Combat Infantryman's Badge. So he is being looked on as being a fast mover, if you will, but he's in a position where there aren't a lot of black soldiers or officers. One, there aren't a lot of black soldiers, but there are definitely not a lot of black officers. And so he's fighting upstream, but being helped along the way because he's showing some potential and competency.
Well, it's more than potential. It was right. I mean, he really was a very competent officer. And fortunately, our Army recognizes this. Tell us about how he moved over to military intelligence, which brings us back to that's not an oxymoron. So tell us how that move occurred.
You can't let that one die, can you?
I can't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Back in his day, we really didn't have a military intelligence branch. So you could be an infantry officer, but also be an what we'll call an intelligence officer, just to keep us from having the oxymoron come in. But you could do both. And in my day, when I made the transition, they still had the program, which was kind of like a dual branch, but you could be what was called an 1135, which is infantry intel. And when I came in, they quit doing that. They'd quit that. But my first boss, believe it or not, was an infantry officer. My first intelligence supervisor was an infantry officer with an intel background. And what really made it so hard was that you had to know all of these things intel-wise, but you were constantly going back and being an infantryman. Now, the good side to that is that you never quit being an infantryman, and so you were able to give that perspective of an infantry officer to intel people. And General Dillard was famous for his view that we need to get people out of the suits and into the boots. And he jokingly said that, but he was serious about it. that there were a bunch of people that believed counterintelligence people just needed to be in suits walking around looking cool and whatever. And his answer was, no, you need to be in these boots and being relevant to the tactical soldier. So not strategic focus, but tactical focus.
And again, he sort of had this unique perspective because he started over on the enlisted side, artillery in Europe, before kind of moving in a different direction. And one of the sort of, sometimes there's a life's a circle. He ends up as the first black deputy chief of staff intelligence for the U.S. Army Europe. He couldn't have imagined that when he went over there in, say, 1946 or 7.
Jim, I can't imagine that today, that you could take an infantry officer and basically put him into a two-star billet of a organization that is in charge of all the land forces in Europe during the Cold War. So I mentioned during the Cold War. So we're ready to go to war at any time. This is not Vietnam's done. And we now, the whole focus of the U.S. Army is on Europe. And he is the lead intel guy. I can't even imagine how tough that is. And the scrutiny that he's being put under because he's not a true blood MI officer.
Yeah, well, and again, and this is so much of life in general, just not the Army, but, you know, he didn't go to West Point. It's not a ring knocker, right? He's African-American, so he doesn't fit in that regards. He went to Tuskegee Institute, which has a huge reputation in more on the Air Force side, the Army Air Corps side, than it does in the regular Army side. So just a whole lot of different pathways that got him into all of these firsts. Do you want to talk to us about some of the firsts that he's kind of broke the glass on?
Well, I'm not sure I can remember all the firsts that he did. I will say this. He was only the fifth general officer when he pinned on his star. So there's not a lot of precedence for this. And you hit on a key point that he wasn't the typical guy. And we talked, you talked about not being a ring knocker. He's not even that. He's a Mustang, or what some call a Mustang, which is an OCS guy. So most of the OCS guys don't get an opportunity to make it as far as he did. And I guess the biggest thing that he was the first on was he was the first officer to attend the National War College in D.C. And that was go ahead.
Well, I have from his introduction to the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, another little paragraph I'll read, which says, General Dillard served as the first black general officer in the office of the Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence, the last J-2 for the U.S. Military Assistance Command in Vietnam, the first U.S. Army Forces Command Deputy Chief of Staff Intelligence, and the first black Deputy Chief of Staff Intelligence for the U.S. Army Europe, prior to his retirement from the Army in 1980. I mean, along the way, there are a whole lot of firsts, aren't there?
You know, they they really are. And the funny thing is, as I was researching even more into General Dillard, you brought up the point of where he's the final military assistance command Vietnam J-2, meaning the Joint Staff General Officer Command, the guys that are in charge of all of Vietnam. He didn't go there during that tour to be the intel officer. He had gone back to being the infantry guy again. And so he was the deputy chief of staff for the CORDS program, which is basically the civilian advisory and development program in Vietnam. It was only to the point of we were about to get out of Vietnam. And so the J-2, he left. The war's not even over. And this guy leaves. And so they're going, okay, well, we need a strong intel guy didn't Ollie, what, isn't he an intel guy?
Yeah, we give it to him. Yeah.
And so they walked over and said, hey, Ollie, do you want to do this? And he thinks about it a little bit. And remembering that, you know, some of the, he's got about, I think, four things that he tries to think of in life. Part of it, one of his final ones is seize opportunities when you have the ability to seize opportunities.
Wow. Isn't that a pearl of wisdom that needs to be passed down to everybody? This isn't a job he was looking for. Not even sure it was a job that he wanted, but it was an opportunity and you kind of have to grab the bull by the horns, don't you?
You do. And beyond even that, Jim, you have to be ready to do that. So he's preparing, he's thinking about these things all during that time period. So he's already had a 2-year tour being a provincial military advisor up there in Kontum province with General Nguyen Hap Duong is the guy's name, the last mayor of Saigon. And these guys have gotten along really well, and he's really made his name. Ollie's made his name up there in that province of how they have, his advisory team has really done a good job of working with the people. And he's got those kind of tentacles, if you will, that he can kind of pull from, but big time that he recognized opportunity.
Well, and you have to, you're right. You have to be ready for the opportunity. You have to have the skill set, the communication, the analytical thinking. He's demonstrated all of that at that point. And we're talking to Colonel Stephen Perkins, U.S. Army retired. He helped Major General Oliver Dillard write his book, Little Old War Stories. And Steve has authored a number of articles on General Dillard's career, including The Forgotten Sable Officer, which was published in the Military Intelligence and Professional Journal. You are, if you will, Steve, and the family views you this way, as sort of the official biographer for Major General Oliver Dillard. How'd you find yourself in that role?
Well, it was because him being the first general officer or the first intel guy, G2, at Forces Command. So I just taken over. And we had a new building at Fort Liberty, Fort Bragg. And so we started naming conference rooms. We had about 3 conference rooms that we were going to try to name after people. And so as we did that, they said, well, you can't name after people. I went, okay.
There's a rule.
Right. And so I said, that's fine. And then I thought to myself, well, what campaigns, because we're going to make, you had to name them after campaigns. I said, what campaigns was General Dillard in? So the first one, which is really when he made the transition, was the UN defensive campaign of the Korean War. And so that's what we did, was we named the conference room after him. And I immediately started thinking, what are the things that I can do? And the reason that I called the first article that we had in the Military Intelligence Professional Bulletin, or MIPB, the reason I wrote about it, and it's entitled The Sable Officer, is I had pulled from a guy, his PhD thesis was talking about general officers that had made something of themselves. And he talks about the reason he chooses instead of black is he said he goes with sable. And the reason is that he says, well, people come in all kinds of colors, and sable is, it has multicolors. And so that was how he did it. And I went after the title and I said, you know, he is, he was the, from an MI standpoint, an intelligence standpoint, he was the quintessential perfect person to show how people have grown since 1951, 53 probably is when they really got rid of segregation, but how we had really grown as a military and had taken a look, had kind of grown as an organization or as an institution. And so he was the first. And so I decided that he was going to be the guy that I was going to put a lot of time and effort into.
Well, he certainly deserves it because his career is phenomenal. The more you look into it, the more you recognize it. But it's been recognized by others. He was awarded the Military Intelligence Corps Association's Lieutenant Colonel Knowlton Award for Excellence in Intelligence. He was inducted into the Officer Candidate School Hall of Fame, the Army Military Intelligence Hall of Fame, the Alabama Military Hall of Honor, the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor most recently. The VA named its community clinic in Canton, Michigan in his honor.
He was also put into the Army's Military Intelligence Hall of Fame.
I mean, these are all outside recognitions of what a tremendous man he was, officer, leader, across a whole variety of times and circumstances. As we close out here, Colonel Perkins, give us your kind of overall thoughts of how Colonel or Major General Dillard's life should be remembered.
He's really a guy that took on a lot of challenges that, and I use this in the dedication of the Canton facility, I use that he was our hero. And he put a lot of effort into being an honorable person with humility. He always pushed himself and others to be excellent in what he did. Many say that you can't lead unless people know that you care. And he spent a lot of time gaining their respect. But more importantly, because that is really important, right? He seized opportunities, but he was able to really push the envelope on those opportunities because he was competent and ready to do the mission that people were going to offer to him. And again, I just think that as a former Buffalo soldier, and I had actually, I'm not sure if this resonated with you or not, but there was another, although you mentioned like five or six other firsts, I'm going to give you another first. Some believe that that his platoon in Korea was the first American victory on the peninsula during that war. The Battle of Yeochon in South Korea, and his platoon went in, and he was very humble as he described it, but his company commander, who was a Buffalo soldier and a paratrooper during World War II, black paratrooper during World War II with the Triple Nickel Regiment. There was an article on this battle written for Infantry Magazine, I believe, where he describes all the goodness that Oliver Dillard did. And part of that eventually led to earning the Silver Star. So definitely still my hero. And I hope it's everybody else will read about him and understand. He's got a Wikipedia page, which he was very proud of. And
this is why we tell these stories, is so that we whet your appetite. And maybe you go do some more reading and research on them, and learn more and see the attributes, the talents, the pearls of wisdom in his life and apply it to yours. And Colonel Stephen Perkins, U.S. Army retired, official biographer, if you will, for Major General Oliver Dillard. I don't think there's any pay that goes with that, but at least it's a title, Steve.
I haven't seen any.
I want to thank you for the time that you've given us today on Veterans Radio.
Well, thanks, Jim, and I really appreciate everybody else listening to it, and you specifically of pulling out all even more that I know of, but may not have been able to articulate earlier than that. So thank you again for your assistance in getting me to open up even more about my hero.
We enjoyed it.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org. We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, Legal Help for Veterans, a veterans disability law firm with a national practice before the VA, can help you on your claims and your appeals. It can be reached at legalhelpforveterans.com or 1-800-693-4800. And PuroClean, a leader in property emergency services. It's the paramedics of property damage, providing water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, mold and biohazard cleanups. You can reach them at puroclean.com or 800-775-7876. We also want to thank our local sponsors. This would include the Charles S. Kettles chapter of the Vietnam Veterans of America, that's chapter 310, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423, the American Legion Irwin Preskin Post 46 in Ann Arbor as well, the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, and certainly the National Vietnam Veterans of America Association. You can be a sponsor by going to veteransradio.org, clicking on the About Us and our sponsors, and help us out. Keep this program alive for the 21 and 22 years. Keep us going for another 20. Thank you.